Good morning. Today's daf in Gittin is Mem Hey. We're on Mem Dal Amid Beis, and we are going over Knossos, various punitive measures that are imposed in the event that you take your Evet Kanani and you sell him illegally. Illegal sale of your Evet Kanani is one of two possibilities. Either number one, you sell your Evet Kanani to a guy. Selling your Evet Kanani to a guy, we discussed yesterday extensively that the basic issue is now is that your Evet Kanani, who was under your ownership, Chayv and Mitzvos, and now you're going to be selling him to a guy, and basically you're removing the privilege responsibility of him doing Mitzvos then, and the Chachamim constant. The Chachamim imposed the Knas. Second illegal sale of an Evet Kanani is going to be when you sell him from one Jew to another, but you are currently in Eretz Yisrael, and your sale now of your Evet Kanani is to another Jew, which in of itself would have been fine, but you sold him to another Jew who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael. So now what you're doing with this Evet Kanani is that you had him being subject to the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael and the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and now you're taking that away from him. And so that also now falls under the category of an illegal sale, and as a result of that, a kanas. And you now that you made such a sale, so you're now going to go ahead and you're going to have to free him. We're going to be discussing now more details regarding the illegal sale, when it qualifies as an illegal sale, selling an Evet Kanani from Eretz Yisrael to outside of Eretz Yisrael, Tana Rabbanan. So we are now with the Braisa. We are on Mem Dalet Amud Beis, and we are about a third of the way down at the two dots, even less. Anyway, Tana Rabbanan, sorry. Hamokher Avdola Lechutz Aretz Yatzal Lecherus. So, and Tzarech Yatzarech Mi Rabo Sheini. Fine. So over here, the Braisa just simply starts off with the basic outline of the result of the illegal sale. And that is that when you illegally sell your Evet Kanani from you to another Jew, again, you're in Eretz Yisrael, he's outside of Eretz Yisrael, so the result now is Knas. And that is that we're going to now force him to redeem him. Now, which him? In other words, there are two people in the sale. There's the Mocher, there's the Kona. So over here, the buyer. The buyer is now going to have to free him. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amer, Pamim Yatsa, Pamim Lo Yatsa, Gatesan. So, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, depends. Not in every incident, not in every occurrence is there going to be a Knas, but it depends. So, and the Gemara goes on to explain, the Braisa goes on to explain, Gatesan. Amer, Ploni Avdi, Machati, Ploni Antuchi. So, Lo Yatsa. So, if I'm selling him to Ploni Antuchi, Antuchi is a name of an area outside of Eretz Yisrael, but over here, I'm selling him to an Antuchi, but it could very well be that the Antuchi, again, Antuchi is just simply a description of somebody from out of town, or in this case, out of Eretz Yisrael, who may currently reside in Eretz Yisrael. So if the wording was, I'm selling him to an Antuchi, so lo yatsa, just because you're selling him to Antuchi, does not mean that you're selling him to outside of Eretz Yisrael, meaning that wasn't your intention. It could very well be that he currently resides in Eretz Yisrael. However, Antuchi Shib Antuchi. However, if it is clear in the sale that you were planning on selling him outside of Eretz Yisrael, meaning that you're not just selling him to an Antuchi, but one who is living currently in Antuchi, so then Yatsa. So now you are engaged in illegal sale and therefore are subject to the Knas. The Antanya Mechartiu La Antuchi Yatsa. La Antuchi Ashari Belud Lo Yatsa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I'm going to show you another Braisa. And in this Braisa, the wording is a little bit different. Meaning in this Braisa, it says that if I sell him to an Antuchi, so you are, so that's an illegal sale. And therefore he has to go free. However, La Antuchi Shuri Belud. But over here, if I clarify and say Antuchi that lives in Lud. Lud, obviously, a town in Eretz Yisrael. Currently the airport. But in other words, if I say I'm selling him to an Antuchi who lives in Eretz Yisrael, then and only then does it not qualify as an illegal sale. Otherwise stated, it's a perfectly legal sale. So now what I do is I'm taking this Braisa we just learned together. I compare it to the previous Braisa, and you'll notice, of course, that it's not a match. So lo kasha ha disley beisley beretz Yisrael. So ha disley ishpizi beretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says it depends whether or not he has a house in Eretz Yisrael or he just simply has an Airbnb. If he's got a house in Eretz Yisrael, so at that point in time, you can assume that the sale was a perfectly legal sale, and you don't have to specify and you don't have to write in the contract, I'm selling it to this guy in Lud. In other words, he's got a house in Eretz Yisrael. Chances are that he's living in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, if he's only got an Airbnb and He's not a local and he's not a resident. And so therefore, the only way it's going to be a good sale is if you write in the contract, I'm selling it to this Antuchi who lives in Lod. Okay, so basically what the Gemara is saying is that it's true, you have to make the only way that you can legally sell your Eved Kanani from one person in Eretz Yisrael to another is where you clarify that it's going to be to another person in Eretz Yisrael. And you just have to look at a couple more contextual clues in order to make sure that you are in fact selling him to somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael. Bar Rav Yirmiyah ben Bava Shanasi Isha Be'eretz Yisrael Ve'echnisu Lo Avadim Ushvachos Ve'dayto Lachzor Mahu. Okay, so over here now we're going to get in a very detailed question. Oh, this Rav Yirmiyah question, I admit, is going to be complex and complicated. I'm just going to give a couple of brief introductory words, and then we'll see the question of Rav Yirmiyah inside. Basically, what's happening over here is that there's a marriage. She's coming into the marriage with an Eved Kanani. Now, she's marrying a guy who's for sure going to take her and live outside of Eretz Yisrael. And the question then becomes, is this an illegal sale? Did this marriage... I know, it's so funny. Did this marriage qualify as an illegal sale of the Eved Kanani to somebody living outside of Eretz Yisrael? Okay. It's complicated because basically what we have to know is what the structure of this marriage was. And when I say structure, I mean the finances where she's bringing assets into the marriage. Two types of assets that a woman can bring into a marriage, Nechsei Malug, Nechsei Tzon Barzel. Over here, it seems like we're describing Nechsei Tzon Barzel. Nechsei Tzon Barzel, where any asset that she brings into the marriage, where? At the marriage, at the chasta, they're gonna appraise the items that she's bringing into the marriage, and the appraised number is actually written into the ksuva. Husband at that point in time now gains full control of those assets, but with the promise that, if in the event, upon death or divorce, the husband's going to be fully responsible for the appraised value of those items. Those items go up in value, they'll go down in value. All that's going to be endured or suffered by the husband, but the actual appraised value is going to go to the woman. This is what's called, I just described, Nechsei Tzon Barzel. As opposed to Nechsei Malug, which I'm not going to explain right now, but it's just, Nechsei Malug is just another way of structuring money that she brings into the marriage. By Nechsei Tzon Barzel now, so as part of her Nechsei Tzon Barzel, what is she coming into the wedding? She's coming into the marriage. She's coming in with Avadim. So she has now an Eved Kanani that she's bringing into the marriage, and they're going to be appraised at the time of the marriage, and their value is going to be written into the Ksuva. So far, so good. And now, Rav Yirmiyah has the following question. So the husband now is a Ben Bavel. He lives in Bavel, and he marries not only a nice Jewish girl, but one who lives in Israel. And she's bringing in Avadim Shvachas into the marriage, structuring them as Nechsei Tzon Barzel, and he's going to go back to Bavel. Okay. So basically, was she involved in an illegal sale, selling her Avadim from Eretz Yisrael to outside of Eretz Yisrael via the marriage? So Mahu. So, So again, now we need more information, and that's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Ravami. This machlokas is introduced to us back in I was going to say Ksuvas. The truth of the matter is, it's really introduced in the Gemara Yevamos. But regardless, in other words, here we are now at the tail end of Seder Nashim. We've gone over this machlokas before, but I will forgive myself and everybody else for not remembering it. It's not true. I'm not going to forgive myself. So, but the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Ami is basically now when I have Nechsei Tzon Barzel and the marriage has terminated, and now she is going to be receiving at least the value of those items. Can she actually demand the items proper? Is she allowed to demand the items proper? That is the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Ami. Rav Yehuda is of the position Hadini Ma, that what she could do now, she can demand the items proper. Even though she is assured the value, the appraised value of those items, but she also has the right to demand the actual items themselves. Why? Sentimental. Family heirlooms. In other words, even though he has to make sure that he's going to pay her for the value of the item, but if the items are still there intact, she can ask for the actual items themselves. That she does, Rav Yehuda, the way it's expressed is Hadin Ima. On the other hand, there's also the sheet of Rav Ami. Rav Ami's of the position that Hadin Imo, that in other words, he does not have to give the items themselves. In other words, again, the items were appraised at the time of the marriage. All he needs to do is just give her the value of those items, but the items themselves can be retained by the husband. Okay, already, by the way, that's a lot of information. And the Gemara goes on to explain, Tibai Laman Damar Adini Ma. Now, over here, I'm going to look at it from Rav Yehuda's standpoint. Kevin da Adini Ma, Kiti da Damu. So on one hand, we could say that over here, those avadim are hers, and because she's able to collect them at the end of the marriage, they are hers and they remain hers. And so therefore, we can make the argument that this does not qualify as an illegal sale. On the other hand, alternatively, Odilma came de Mishab de Lepere, ki di de damu. Alternatively, we know that while they're married, so he is allowed all usages of the Evi Kanani, meaning the Evi Kanani are hers, but usages and rights and enjoyment of the Evi Kanani can be enjoyed by the husband, right? What we call peros. So over here, they belong to him. And so since he gets to enjoy them during the marriage, maybe this does qualify as a sale. And again, it would be an illegal sale because now the avadim are being sold from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz. That's one way to analyze. Another way to analyze Tibai Laman Damar Adini Mo. We can analyze it from the viewpoint of Rav Ami. And Kevin Adini Mo Ki Di Dei Dami. So on one hand, if at the end of the marriage he gets to keep the avadim and he only has to pay for its value, that is a sale. And over here, an illegal sale, because again, she's from Israel, he's from outside of Eretz Yisrael. Effectively, she just sold the avadim to outside of Eretz Yisrael. Odilma came into Lokani le Legufe, Kididadami. So the, on the other hand, on the other hand, they are principally hers. And now granted, by the way, that what he can do is that he can offset that by paying for its value, but effectively they still are hers, and therefore kiddi da dami, even according to Rav Ami, we could still view them as effectively, essentially hers, and therefore it does not qualify as an illegal sale. Okay. Yeah, no, you're right. The Gemara assumes not. The Gemara just wants to know, when do we apply the kanas? Okay. So that's the question of Rav Yirmiyah, and I admit, by the way, that's going to be one of the more challenging parts of today's daf. You know, when a woman gets married and takes her avadim and throws them in as nechsei tzon barzel, and she's living in Israel and she's marrying a bavel guy, and they're going to go back to bavel. So did this translate as an illegal sale of Evi Kanani? And again, it really is a function of how we view nechsei tzon barzel. And even as we say that, we still can argue within each of the positions.
Why is the shaila after the gerusha? What about when she got
married? Right.
She's going to Chutz
Laaretz.
She's going to Chutz
Laaretz. Yeah, but in other words, but if they're her avadim, and again, it's just structured, in other words, it's structured as part of the marriage, but they're effectively hers, she didn't sell them. And therefore, not a violation of the Issa de Rabbanan of the illegal sale of your Evi Kanani. Because they're hers.
Even though they're going to Chutz Laaretz.
They're going to Chutz Laaretz, but they're hers. In other words, the only time that the Knas is imposed is when you sell them from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz. Okay. Amar Rabbi Abba Ushanali Rabbi Yochanan Nevesh Yatzach Rabba L'Surya. Umachro Usham Rabba Yatzal Echeros. Okay. The owner goes to Chutz Laaretz. The Evi Kanani joins his owner. And then while they're in Chutz Laaretz, now a sale is made. So Yatzal Echeros. Still, that's going to qualify as an illegal sale. Vatini Rabbi Chia ibeid et zechuso. And meanwhile, Rabbi Chia teaches in a braisa, no, he lost his right. Meaning the Evi Kanani. The Evi Kanani chose and elected to follow his master. Now, I know, by the way, it's a little bit funny. Does he have a choice in the matter? Right? So, this is where, I'm speaking for myself. Because we don't live in a world of Evi Kanani, so, it's kind of hard to really understand and engage, what options do they have? But according to the Braisa, Rabbi Chia, Ibed is Zechuso. Meaning you went with your owner to Chutz Laaretz and then he sold you? No. You're not going to be protected. The rabbinic protection that you're going to be afforded is only when you're living in Eretz Yisrael and illegally sold to somebody in Chutz Laaretz. Then you're going to be afforded with rabbinic protection. Under these circumstances, you're not going to be afforded with rabbinic protection. So the Gemara says, Lo Kasha. So Ibed Zechuso. So what we have over here is a stira now between Rav Yochanan and the Braisa Rabbi Chia. I know Rav Yochanan's an Amora, but But the Gemara is assuming right now that these two positions are basically both valid, legitimate positions, but of course they're worlds apart of one another. According to Rav Yochanan, the Eved Kanani is still going to be given rabbinic protection, even though he went with his owner to Chutz Aretz, but still, a sale occurring afterwards still is an illegal sale. And therefore, the Eved Kanani is going to go free. But meanwhile, according to Rabbi Chiya, the Eved Kanani will not go free. So, Lokasha, Kan Das Rabo Lachzor, and Kan Shein Das Rabo Lachzor. So the Gemara says that the truth of the matter is that what we'll do is we'll make a simple distinction. When the owner went to Chutz Aretz, was it a business trip? Was it a vacation? Or was it a permanent move? If we're talking about he's just simply going to be there for temporary amount of time, but he plans on going back to Eretz Yisrael, so now him and his Eved Kanani are viewed as B'nai Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, upon sale, it is going to qualify as an illegal sale, and therefore the Eved Kanani is going to go free. If, on the other hand, when he moved to Chutz Aretz, that wasn't a temporary move, but rather, we're moving to Chutz Aretz, period. So under those circumstances, the Eved Kanani joins him, and at that point in time, the Eved Kanani is no longer afforded the Protection Act of illegal sale. Because the Eved Kanani now is basically gone to Chutz Aretz. V'hatanya Yotze Eved, and the Gemara now is going to be quoting a Braisa. Most of the time, V'hatanya is a challenge, but in this case, V'hatanya is just simply supporting everything we just got done saying. V'hatanya Yotze Eved Acharab L'Surya. So the Gemara, it breaks for just a moment. Yotze, he goes to Surya Losagid Alonafik. V'atanan, Eina Kol Motzian. Now, if you are an Eved Kanani and your owner decides to leave Eretz Yisrael, you can say, thank you, but no thank you, I'm not going to go. I'm here in Eretz Yisrael, I live in Eretz Yisrael, I now have the privilege and responsibility of all the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael, you'll go without me. Okay? And it's a Mishnah. And so the Eved Kanani can say that, Ela Yatsa Eved Acharab L'Surya. Okay, so that means to say that we're going to make a small edit in the Braisa. What the Braisa really means is that the Eved Kanani elected to go with his owner to Surya. Surya being Chutz Aretz. Now, Umachra Rabba Shamim Das Rabba Lachzor Kofenoso, Vimein Das Rabba Lachzor, Ein Kofenoso. And what do we have over here? Exactly the chiluk that we made previously. That it depends on whether or not this is a temporary trip or this is a permanent trip. If this is a temporary trip and the owner is planning on going back to Eretz Yisrael, the Eved Kanani now is under the protection. Right? He's under the Knas Chachamim where if a sale is made, so this is going to be viewed as a sale, an illegal sale of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Aretz, and therefore he gets to go free. If on the other hand the move over here was a permanent move, and now the owner is a Chutz Aretz owner, and the Eved Kanani elected to go with him, so the Eved Kanani is no longer under the Protection Act. Okay. Am Ravanan Shamas Mine Demar Shmuel Tarte Chada Hachvidach Ditmar. So now I heard the following. I heard two things. One that we just got done discussing. Owner moves to Chutz Aretz, selling his Eved Kanani after making the move. I heard that, and I heard Mocher Sodeh B'Shas Yovel Atzma, selling the field during the Yovel year itself. Rav Amar Mechura V'Yotza, Shmuel Amar Eina Mechura Kol Ikar. And whether or not it is a sale or it is not a sale, you see what happens in Yovel is all land goes back and returns to its owner, to its original owner. And that's true if you sold land before Yovel. Let's say you sell land during Yovel, so it's going to be one of the funniest sales in the world, which means automatic return. Here, I'm selling you the land. Fantastic. Give me the money. Sure. And because we're in the Yovel year itself, so the land automatically returns to the seller. That's funny. Now, it's funny, by the way, for everybody, but of course the buyer. In other words, the buyer just purchased land that now automatically returns. Did the buyer know this information? Hold that thought just a moment. But anyway, b'chada hadri zvina, b'chada lo hadri zvina, v'lo yadano haminayu. Okay, so an illegal sale of an Eved. So what happens to the illegal sale of the Eved? So the Eved goes free. Okay. Is the buyer going to get refunded? Great question. Right? Important question. Now, in the sale of a land during the Yovel year, where the land immediately goes back to the seller, is the buyer going to get refunded? That also is a great question. In other words, on a sale in which basically you lose your item that you purchased, so do you get refunded? The vast majority of the time, the answer, of course, is yes. But in these circumstances, however, we're now asking the question, is a buyer entitled to a refund? And what I learned is the following. In one of these cases, entitlement to refund. In another one of these cases, no entitlement to refund. And here's what I don't know. I don't know which of these cases is refund worthy, and I don't know which one is not refund eligible. It's a small detail. Amar of Yosef Nechze Anan. So Shmami Na Kanya Rabbi Sheni Avalo Hadri Svine Vichy Amar Shmuel Hasam Ina Mechura Maus Chozrim. Okay, so we're gonna observe the following, and that is that in the case of a legal sale of the Eved Kenani, so what do we say that the second owner, otherwise known as the buyer, so he's the one with the responsibility of writing get shichur, which means what, that the sale was a complete sale, which means that he's not entitled to a refund. So in that case, he's not entitled to a refund. So over here, v'chiyam or ashmol asam. So now when we're talking about the sale of land in Yovel, so ain't a mechura, so that means to say that the sale is not the sale. Umaos, right? Umaos chosim. And that means that in such a case, the buyer is in fact going to be getting a refund of his money. So as far as Rav Hanan is concerned, meaning he didn't conclude this way. Why didn't he conclude this way? Number one, he didn't know about the Braisa. That's number one. And number two is that even if it were just for Shmuel, Shmuel would say that the sale is not a sale, but what we could have said within Shmuel is that the sale is not a sale, but the money could be viewed as a matana. Okay? It could have said that. In other words, again, that's not the conclusion. The conclusion is that you're going to be receiving a full refund, but nevertheless, you could have said that. Now, me did the have a mekadesh as a choso, did mar mekadesh as a choso, rav amar maos chosrin, ushmuel amar maos matana. And I'll give you a precedent, where you have a transaction, which is not a transaction, but the money's not going to get refunded. The money's going to be viewed as a matana. I know this is going to be a strange case, but this is not the first time in Seder Nashim we've gone over this case. What happens is that you go over to your sister and you say, I want to be Mekadosh you. I want to marry you. You can't marry your sister. It doesn't work. The Kedushin is not going to be Tofes. You give her Kesef Kedushin. And so the simple question is, how do we view that Kesef Kedushin? So it's a machlokit between Rav and Shmuel. Shmuel says the money's not going to get refunded. Do you know why? Because Shmuel says that we're going to view the money as basically a matana. What you were doing is you were looking to gift your sister, right? Maybe she was difficult. Maybe she wouldn't take the money. I'm not sure what the circumstances are, but in other words, you couch it in, this is Kesef Kedushin. I'm putting in air quotes. Obviously, it's not Kesef Kedushin. You can't marry her. But effectively, what you wanted to do is you wanted to give her a gift, and this is a creative, unusual, way to basically give her money. So what we learned according to Shmuel is that sometimes non-transactions can be viewed just simply as gifts. So over here, I could have argued that in the sale of land in the Yovel year, where the land is going to just go right back to the seller, you know what the buyer was really doing? Buyer was just simply gifting him some money. And they're going about it in some strange and unusual way. You could have said all that. And now what we're learning is that's not the case. In other words, in the case of the sale of the land, so it is, according to Shmuel, it is a non-sale, and the money is going to be refunded to the buyer. Okay. Where are we right now? I admit it's a difficult piece of Gemara that we just went through over here in terms of how do we view sales that are basically effectively like going to be uprooted or canceled? Canceled sales, is there going to be a refund of money? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. In the case of a land that's sold in the Yovel year, so you can expect a refund on that money. The land doesn't come to you, the land goes immediately back to the seller, and the buyer is going to receive a refund. That's the Gemara's conclusion. However, in the case of an illegal sale of the Eved Kenani, you sold them to another Jew, but you're in Eretz Yisrael and he's outside of Eretz Yisrael, so over there, the buyer is not going to get refunded. He's going to lose the Eved Kenani. He's not going to get refunded. Why? Because it's a kenas. Because this is a punitive fine that's imposed. Okay. And hopefully you've been wondering now up until this point in time And that is that basically, you know, it takes two to tango. If I may just go cliche for just a moment. And over here, we're talking now about an illegal sale. You sold your Eved Kanani to somebody living outside of Eretz Yisrael. So do you know who's in the wrong over here? Two people. In other words, it's the buyer and it's the seller. Seller shouldn't sell the Eved Kanani. The buyer shouldn't have bought him. And so over here, we're the Chachamim now, under the punitive fine, under the Kanas, to protect the Eved Kanani. So now we're saying to them, oh, no good. And you have to go and free him and you have to suffer the loss. But who are we pointing to over here? We're pointing to the buyer. He's just one participant in the illegal act, in the illegal sale. The seller also participated in it. I'm just curious, says the Gemara, right? This is a question we could have asked since the beginning of the entire sugya. Why are we bearing down on the buyer? Why don't we bear down on the seller? Both of them were involved in the illegal sale. It's a simple question. So the Gemara asks, "Said Amalei, Abai LeRav Yosef, my chazes de kantina lokeach, niknesei lemocher, Amalei lav achbar ganav elachur ganav." So the Gemara attempts to explain it via a mashal, a parable, and that is that what happens when the rat steals the cheese? So when the rat steals the cheese, so what he does is he takes the cheese and you're chasing the rat in order to get back your cheese, because of course you're going to eat the cheese after it's in the mouth of the rat. But okay, sorry. but meanwhile, you're not going to be able to get to the rat. Do you know why? Why? Because he's going to go into a hole in the wall, and now the hole in the wall is going to afford him protection. So over here, the mashal, that's the mashal. What's the nimshal? The nimshal over here is that basically we have a seller and we have a buyer. Now the Eved Kanani was sold from the seller to the buyer. In the analogy, just within the analogy, so the seller is the rat and the buyer is the hole. Okay. I know this is strange. I know it is. And since really what we can do, in other words, who's preventing me from going ahead and getting the cheese in the case of the rat? The hole's preventing me because I can't get through that small hole. So over here now, so who is now going to be preventing me from getting to the Eved Kanani? It's going to be the buyer. Okay. It's really strange. So anyway, so Amar Lei Ilav Achbar Chura Menale. So the Gemara says, come on. That's in other words, even within the analogy, I'm not buying it. In other words, if the rat hadn't picked up the cheese and ran, in other words, the hole is valueless. In other words, again, it basically takes two to tango. Over here, in the sale, in the illegal sale, I can assign blame to the seller. I can assign blame to the buyer. All right, they both were involved in an illegal sale. And over here again, where I'm resetting the question, why are we going ahead and we are, and the kanas is going on the buyer and not on the seller? So the Gemara says, so Mistabra, so the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to say now the following. Mistabra hechadika isura asam kansina. So the Gemara says, and again, I'm going to use another cliche, who is left holding the bag? Okay? So over here, you're right. The seller was involved in an illegal sale. Okay? And obviously that's not good. But in terms of who's going to be receiving the brunt of the knas and who's going to have to pay the fine, and the answer is going to be it's going to be the buyer. Why? Because right now he's holding the goods. Okay, so the one left holding the bag, so he's the one who's going to be suffering the consequences. Okay, good. Adkan, we're almost done. We're not done yet. Okay, Hahu Avda Da Arak Michutz Aretz La'aretz. Okay, we are now prepared to tell a couple of stories. One story that we're going to tell is we have a runaway slave. A runaway slave who's owned by a Jew, but he ran to Eretz Yisrael. So now what are we going to do with a runaway slave who now currently is residing in Eretz Yisrael? Rabbi Ami Amar Lei Nichtov Lach Shtar Admei. So he goes to Rav Ami now. For legal advice or for a legal decision. I now have my Eved Kanani who is here in Eretz Yisrael, ran away from me here in Eretz Yisrael. What am I supposed to do? Rabbi Ami says, I'll tell you what you're supposed to do. And that is, allow him to live here in Eretz Yisrael. You can't get him back. Not only that, I understand that you had financial holding of yours, right? That was a value of yours. Okay, so in other words, so what he's going to do, what we're going to do is that we're gonna write an IOU. He is going to be responsible to have to pay you for his value, but you are going to have to free him. Oh, that's interesting. And you're going to write him a shar shechur. Okay, so good. So Rabbi Ami again now breaks the news to him. It's unfortunate, but as far as Rabbi Ami is concerned, this is the correct thing to do. Now, if you don't follow me right now, and if you don't listen to everything I'm telling you, what we're going to do is we're going to just simply strip him of you. So in other words, right now, you're going to go about it the way I described it, where we're going to write a note. He's going to be indebted to you his value, and you're going to write him a shtar shechur. And if you don't listen to all of that, all of the above, we're simply going to take him away from you. Why? Based on the drasha of Rav Achib Rav Yoshi Adetanya. So lay yeshu ba'artzicha pen yachtios osichali. Number one, a pasuk in Mishpatim. The pasuk says that you are not allowed to have any one of the seven Canaanite nations living in Canaan when you get there. In other words, when you get there, so you're going to be you're going to be getting rid of all of the Shiva Amamim. And Yachol veKochav Meshikiba Alav Shol Alav Rabbanus Kochavim Hakasav Medaber. But what about if it's somebody who makes a firm commitment that he's not going to be over to Avodah Zara? So Talmud Lamer Lo Saskir Eved Al Adonav Asher Natzal Elecha Meim Adonav. So Maita Kante Imcha Yashu Bekir Becha. So now we go to Parshas Kiseitze, and there in Parshas Kiseitze Lo Saskir, we have the pasuk that says that when you have a runaway, you do not return him to its owner. Now, it's not perfectly clear in that pasuk what exactly the context is. According to Rabbi Achi, it's describing somebody who is running away from his owner. And his owner was in Chutzaris, and now he ran to Eretz Yisrael. And that's the context of the pasuk in Lo Sasgir. And don't return him to its owner. So in other words, what Rabbi Ami is saying to this owner is that, look, you're going to free him. You will get reimbursed for him. And if you don't do that, I'm just simply going to apply Rabbi Achi's understanding of this pasuk. And that means that we're going to strip him from you altogether. Okay. V'kashle de Rabbi Yoshia. Hi. Now, as far as the pshat that we just offered, Rav Yoshia was bothered by that interpretation. Meim Adonav, Meim Aviv, Mi Ba'elei. If you're right in your interpretation, it shouldn't say Me Adonav, but rather it should say Me Aviv, Meim Aviv. Elam Rav Yoshia Bemocher Avdo Luchutz Aretz Akasim Adaber. According to Rav Yoshia, who argues with Rav Achi, he says that the pasuk is describing the sale of a Nevekanani from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Aretz. Right, the flip of what we just got done saying. And Vikashi le Rabbi Achi b'Rabbi Yoshia. Now Rabbi Achi is unhappy with the drasha of Rabbi Yoshia. Why? Because Hai Asher Yinatzel E Lecha, Asher Yinatzel Me Imecha Mi Ba'ilei. Textually, the pasuk should have had a mem and not an aleph. It should have said Me Imecha. And according to Rabbi Achi, just the opposite. The Eved Kanani who runs from outside of Eretz Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. Tan Yidach, the Gemara quotes another Braisa, Lo Zasker, Eved El Adonav. Rabbi Omer, Belokech Eved Amanath, Shacharo HaKosov Medaber. A third interpretation of the Pasuk of Lo Zasker, and that is that I'm going to be buying an Eved Kanani with the plans of freeing him. How does that work? Hechidami, the Amr of Nachma Yitzhak, the Kasav Lahachi, Lekisha Ekechacha, Hare Atzmecha, Kanuye Lach Me'achshav. When I purchase you, so you are going to be Kanuye Lach Me'achshav. That means to say that you are going to be free immediately. In other words, he makes a condition, a Tanai, that I'm going to be purchasing you and the future purchase of you is going to be resulting in your current freedom. Okay, Rashi gets involved over here because it sounds like what I'm able to do is a future event that will affect his status right now. And right, generally speaking, we say Ein Adam Makna Davar Shelo Bala Olam, that you cannot make a kinyan on something that is not here yet. I cannot create his current freedom based on a future purchase. So Rashi points out over here that presumably over here we're going like the sheet of Rabbi Meir, where Rabbi Meir does allow for a kinyan, for a kinyan on the davar shelo ba'ala olam anyway. What do we have over here, by the way? The pasuk of Lo Saskir, meaning that when you have a runaway, you do not return him to his owner. What is the context of that pasuk over here? We have now no less than in our Gemara, today's daf, Mem Hei of Gittin, three interpretations of the pasuk. Right? One is we're describing an Eved that is running from Chutz Aretz to Eretz Yisrael. We have another interpretation of an Eved that's being sold from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Aretz. And finally, a third interpretation of where the buyer makes full intent that he plans on freeing him when he purchases him. Okay. Rav Chista Arek Alei Avda Lebekutai. Okay? Rav Chista, one more story before we start with the next Mishnah. Rav Chista's Eved Kenani ran away. Okay, I already made the observation, but I get to make it again in today's daf, and that is we owned Eved Kenanim up until what point historically? I don't know. However, it's clear, however, the Amoraim own an Eved Kenani. So already all the way up to and through the Tkufa of Amoraim, so we owned Eved Kenanim. And so over here, Rav Chista's Eved Kenani ran away, and he happened to run away to a Kusi. Okay, a Kusi, we've discussed time and again, so somewhat Jewish, right? Jewish. So shalach lehu, haju ani ali. So now he sent the following letter, and that is, I need you to return to me my eved kenani. Shalach lehu. So the kusim sent back lo sazgir eved el adonav. So they sent back. What do you mean lo sazgir? You're not allowed to return a runaway slave. Okay. So the kusim, by the way, who were observant, but their degree and level of observance is always an issue within the Gemara. But anyway, they're Jewish and they're holding by the Torah and they're quoting the pasuk in the Torah. In other words, they know the Chumash and they know the pasuk in Parshas Ki Tse. And basically, the pasuk says, "Don't return a slave to its owner." Now, again, we have Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, as much as I say we have Torah Shebaal Peh, by the way, in today's daf, we learned how many different interpretations of that pasuk? Three different interpretations of that pasuk. But still, we have a Mesorah, and we have Torah Shebaal Peh, and we, obviously, the halach is going to follow like one of those, but we have an interpretation. But as far as the kusim are concerned, they, for the most part, reject Torah Shebaal Peh, and they, but they're quoting the pasuk. Good. Now, what we're going to do is that we're going to skip the parentheses, and shalach lehu hahu. And so Rav Chista now sends back to the Kusim the following. I'm fully aware of the Pasuk. I know the Pasuk. Here is how to interpret the Pasuk. So, Be'evet Shabarach Michutz Aretz La'aretz. So, Uche de Rabbi Achib Rabbi Yoshia. So he says, yeah, but that Pasuk is extraordinarily limited. That Pasuk is talking about an Eved that runs away from Chutz Aretz Aretz Yisrael. Meaning, and that's not what happened over here. Oh, by the way, the Kusim that took in the runaway Eved were not living in Eretz Yisrael. The Kusim were living in Chutz Aretz together with Rav Chista. Right? Rav Chista obviously was B'nai Bavel. He was living in Bavel. The Kusim were there with him in Bavel. So anyway, so Rav Chista basically says to the Kusim, your interpretation of the Pasuk is not going to apply over here because the Pasuk is only talking about where he goes from Eretz Yisrael to, sorry, when he runs from Chutz Aretz to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, good. Umayshna de Shalach Lehu, Kid Rabbi Achib, Rabbi Yoshia, Mishum de Mashmalu cry. Now, why did Rav Chista send them that particular interpretation? Because that interpretation spoke to the Kusim. The Kusim liked that interpretation. They felt that that was the correct interpretation. Again, not because they're holding by Torah Shebaal Peh, but simply because the simplest reading, according to them, matched that particular pshat in the pasuk. Okay. I said one more story. I misspoke. Well, one more story, and then we get to the next Mishnah. Irkas lechamra barku, Abaye Irkas lechamra barkutai. Abaye had a runaway, but not here, not a runaway slave, but rather a runaway donkey. Okay, so shalchlu shadru ali, and the runaway donkey ran to the kusim. Now, this story has nothing to do with our topic at hand. However, there are a couple of connection points. Number one, runaway, and number two, ran away to a kusi. Okay. But after that, previously, we were talking about an Eved Kenani, and here we're talking about donkeys. Okay, so Shadru Ali. So now he says to the Kusim, okay, bring me back my donkey. In other words, look, it's my donkey, he ran away. Hashavas Aveda, right? You guys believe in Hashavas Aveda, right? So Shalchulei Shalach Simana. So the Kusim said, yeah, we believe in Hashavas Aveda, but we also believe that you have to identify it. So can you give me the identifying marker of the donkey? So Shalach Lehu. So he said, Chivre Krisei. White stomach. So the donkey over here is brown overall, and the stomach is white. So Shalchulei Ilav Denachmeini At Lahava Mishadarnala Nialach. So the Kusim said, look, it happens to be that you're unbelievably honest and your reputation precedes you. We happen to know that you're not going to lie, and we happen to know that you're going to, the only time that you claim it's yours is because it's actually yours. Okay. But had you not been Achmeni and had you not had the sterling reputation, we would not have returned it to you. That's not a simon. Why? Every donkey's got a white belly. And so what you pointed to as a simon is not a simon. It is way too generic and there's nothing specific about it. And under normal circumstances, we wouldn't have returned it, but we know that you're a really honest individual and we know that you're telling the truth. Okay. That is a funny story. No. Okay. That was a very long walk that we just went through here in the fourth parak of Gittin that we have now covered. Right, some of the main sugyas in Shas regarding Evi Kanani, and really the truth of the matter is, it's so funny. As long as we've discussed this topic and we've discussed it at length, right, it goes all the way back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah that takes us all the way back to Daf Lamed Zion. Wow. So we're Lamed Zion. We started the sugya on Lamed Zion, and we're here on Daf Mem Hey, and that was a really, really long sugya of Evi Kanani. And meanwhile, really, most of the sugya revolved around Shichur Evet Kanani. So it's not like we discussed Evet Kanani with any kind of detail. All we discussed is the freedom, the emancipation of an Evet Kanani. Under what circumstances? Is it allowed? Is it generally not allowed? When did the Chacham enforce the freedom of an Evet Kanani? And that has been our topic now for well over a week. 37 to 45. That's a lot of blot in Shas dedicated to Shichur Evet Kanani, but good. Where in other words, we find it here in Gittin because Get is the Masechta dedicated to freedom emancipation. I understand most of the time it's talking about a wife being freed from her husband. Okay, again, freedom is not exactly the best way to describe it, but in other words, that's what a Get does. So over here, so in addition to Get, we also talk about Get Shechur, and that is why it came up over here in the fourth paragraph of Gittin, and we spent over a week discussing it. Okay, we're going to move in topics today. Today we're going to go a little overtime in order to catch up to where we need to be. So if you need to go, it's fine. I understand everything is being recorded, and you get to hear my wonderful voice at any point that you want. So if you need to leave, I totally understand. Anyway, we start with the Mishnah. And here we get to a really exciting but unbelievably unfortunate Mishnah, and that is the halachas regarding Pidgin Shvuyim. Pidgin Shvuyim is the ransoming of a captive. One of ours is taken into captivity, and now the captors are demanding a ransom. So we're going to have to pay in order to get him back. Right? I'm only going to speak personally over here. I've seen too many movies, and you know you don't negotiate with terrorists. And I know. But meanwhile, the real life means that sometimes you're going to have to pay in order to get somebody back. So you're going to be paying now. How much in order to get him back? So again, the fourth parak of Gittin talks about various takanas that were made. And so here's another takana that was made, and that is, you cannot overpay. The ransom that you're going to be paying has to be value and only value. Now, I know that's a little bit funny, by the way, because what's the value of a person? That's a little bit strange. But whenever trying to assess and obtain the value of a person, so we're going to have to look at his market value. Okay, in other words, I know we are not slaves, but nevertheless, when appraising how much a person is worth, so everybody could be sold on the slave market, and so that appraised value is going to be called market value, and so therefore, when paying the captors, you cannot pay in excess of market value. Why not? The Mishnah doesn't say, but you can already think of a couple reasons. The Gemara is going to spell it out. Vein mavrichin es hashvuyim mimnei tikan olam rishim gamle omrim mimnei tikan es hashvuyim. Also, you cannot assist in allowing a captor to go ahead and run away from his, I'm sorry, you cannot assist in the captive running away from his captors, and that also is because of Tikkun Olam, and Rishon Gamliel says, because of Takana Shvuyim. We're going to explain that better in just a moment, exactly what's happening in the second half of our Mishnah. Okay. I'm sure everyone knows Maharami Rotenberg was taken into captivity. Right, the Maharami Rotenberg was the Rebbe of the Rush, and we are now somewhere around the 14th century, and France, Germany, and he was taken into captivity, and major discussion. This is one of the most popular historical events where it was one of our gedolim that was taken captive, and they were looking to ransom him, and the Rush wanted to pay an excessive amount of money, and really, really unbelievable story. The Maharam insisted that you can't do that. You're not allowed to overpay for my release. The Maharam refused. He told the Jewish community not to overpay for it. He died in captivity. Right? Whatever. I just recently went. I don't know the story so well, but I just went over this. Years after his death, in other words, not only did they held him captive, but they held the body captive as well. I don't remember exactly, so someone could fact check me. But years after his death, somebody went ahead and paid for the release of his body. And the Maharami Rotenberg is buried right next to the person who sponsored his release. Okay. And off the top of my head, I don't remember his name. Anyway, Ibayilahu. So the Gemara over here tells the following. So Haimi Metikin Ola Mishum Ducha de Siburo Dama Mishum Dola Ligarba Velaise Tvei. So the Gemara over here now gives two proposals in terms of why it is that you can't overpay for a captive. I can't overpay for a captive for one of two possibilities. Number one, ducha de tzibura. Over here, it's going to be unbelievably onerous on the community. In other words, what we're going to do is that obviously we're going to have a community fund. Somebody's taken into captivity, so they're going to go to the rabbi. The rabbi has a discretionary fund, and that discretionary fund is going to pay. Now, if the rabbi is going to be overpaying, so what we're going to then do is then that we're going to put an unbelievable stress and strain on the community, because then what the rabbi is going to do, it's his responsibility, and it's not a pleasant one. He's going to have to go around the community and basically collect from everyone in the community, so that the fund will not be the fund will have money, and it's going to put pressure on the community, and so therefore not to overbear the community with this financial responsibility. So the Chachamim stepped in and said, look, it's not an easy decision, but the decision is going to be made. You cannot overpay for ransom. That's number one. Number two, a second possibility is that if you overpay, what we're going to do is that we're going to encourage this behavior. Okay. Once you overpay for a captor, so that once you overpay the captor, so then what's going to end up happening is that you're only going to incentivize and encourage them to do that. In the captor community, so they're going to say, can you imagine how much I got paid for this one? Oh, unbelievable. And you're going to encourage them to do this. So we have two possible reasons why. By the way, they're not mutually exclusive of one another. But the Gemara right now is going to treat this like your standard question of lumdus. Which of these reasons is the principal reason why the rabbi is instituted? Is it because of the financial burden on the community? That's number one. Or number two is because we're incentivizing them to go ahead and do this again and repeat their behavior. Now, what would be a nafka mina? Meaning, assuming that it's either or, what would be the practical difference? And that, of course, would be private ransoming. Let's say that it's not, in other words, the money's not coming from public funds, but let's say someone privately, somebody very wealthy, obviously, privately wants to go ahead and ransom him. So if we're going to go with the first explanation of the burden on the public, well, if you want to have private money going ahead and redeeming him, that'd be great. If, on the other hand, the issue is you're incentivizing them to do it again, so it doesn't matter who's paying for it. Once you're overpaying, you're incentivizing. So the Gemara says is that the nafka mina between these two reasons is going to be private money. So Tashma, the Levi Bar Darga, Parkala Bar Teba, Talesa Alpe Dinar Rizav. So the Gemara says, look, Levi Bar Darga, So he paid an exorbitant amount of money in order to ransom his daughter. And it was private money. And it was okay, right? So Amar Abaye, Uman Le Malan, De Baratzim Chachamim Avad, Dama Shalom Baratzim Chachamim Avad. So Abaye says, look, I'm gonna throw out a very easy challenge flag on that story. Not that I don't believe the story. I believe the story took place. How do you know that what he did was right? Meaning, right? He did pay a ridiculous amount of money in order to get back his daughter. But maybe the Chachamim would have told him, don't do that. Okay. Okay. So over here, assisting a captor to go free, right? In other words, basically helping him break out of prison. So according to the Tanakhama, you cannot do that. And according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, mimnei takana shvuyim. So the Gemara says they're both basically saying the same thing, but clearly they have two different concerns. From the Mishnah itself, it's not really clear what the difference is. The Gemara goes on to explain. May binayu kabaneo deleka alachad. So the Gemara says the difference between them is, let's say, for example, there's only but one that's taken into captivity. So according to the Tanakhama, the Eimar Vichinus Ashuyim, so in other words, you're not allowed to assist. Even though right now, if you help him break out of jail, so now is anyone currently right now going to be affected? No, no one else is in jail. But nevertheless, according to the Tanakhama, but they now know that the next time they incarcerate, they're going to have to make sure that we're going to do a much better job holding him down, and they're going to be much more difficult in future incarcerations. On the other hand, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's only concern is those who are currently incarcerated together with him. If there's nobody else right now currently incarcerated with him, so you can go ahead and help him break free. Bante de Rav Nachman Bachshon Kedera Biadayhu. Okay. Here we are now in Gittin Memhei, and we're finishing the first Amud, and we're going to hear perhaps one of the more out there stories in Shas. Right, I'm going to challenge you to give me a story that's going to be as wild as the one we're about to see. Okay, everyone be prepared for a really exciting story. The daughters of Rav Nachman stirring the pot with their hands. Stirring the pot with their hands, the pot was boiling hot water. And what they did is they took their hands and they put it into the pot in order to stir the water. And it was scalding hot water and their hands were not at all affected. Now, how are they doing that? Okay, if right now you're thinking about witchcraft and sorcery, so spoiler alert, that's a good thought. But right now, what I'm going to ask you to do is don't think about witchcraft and sorcery. Right now, think more along the lines of they are tzaddikos, right? They're like really, really like righteous about right, not mainstream right from, but like well above that. They're at the point of chassidus, and for them, right? Alan and I were just discussing this last night. And that is that they're living well above the regular laws of nature. And so therefore they can put their arms into the boiling water and stir the pot, and it's no big deal. So Bachshon Kadra B'Yadayu. So Kasher Leila Rav Elish Ksiv Adam Echad Me'elef Matzasi V'Isha B'chol Eila Lo Matzasi. Now, Rav Elish is watching these women and he's like, wow. So I don't understand. Meaning the Pasuk in Koheles describes that, you know, you're not going to find one in a thousand and by a woman. So I'm just simply not going to find. Meaning, I can't believe I found such a tzaddikus. These daughters of Rav Nachman. Ha'ika bante de Rav Nachman garmaluhu milsa v'ishtabyan v'ishtabai unami bahadayu. Okay, now, he was just amazed at their level of chassidus. And meanwhile, the story now turns where they are taken into captivity. The daughters of Rav Nachman, and Rav Elish also is taken into captivity. Okay. Yumachan havayasek habehahu gavra da havayade belashen tzipore. Now, together in prison with them, so there was also a person, this person knew how to communicate with the birds. I know that's weird. I know you and I have never met a person who knows how to communicate with the birds. Okay. And if you do know such an individual, I'd recommend not to share that with anyone. Okay. They're not going to believe you. But anyway, but meanwhile, back in the day, so somebody knew how to talk to the birds. So Asa Orva Vakakarile Amarle Maika Amar Amarle Ilish Barach Ilish Barach. So So now, Rav Ilish is here in prison. He's with the daughters of Rav Nachman. He's with the bird talker. I know the story is strange. I know it is. I told you at the beginning, it's going to be a strange story. So anyway, so the bird talker tells Rav Ilish, you know what the bird just told me? The birds told me that Ilish is able to go free. In other words, break free, Ilish, break free. Basically a message from above that you can go ahead and you can try to escape. You're going to be successful. So Amar Urva Shikrahu, Velosemchina Aleha. So Rav Ilish says, you know those ravens, they lie. I'm telling you right now, don't believe the ravens. So Adahachi Asi Yonavakakari Amarle Mai Kamar Amarle Ilish Barach Ilish Barach. So Amar Kinesi Saw Kiyona Mitilish Mamina Misrachishli Nisa. No. So now it was a Yona that said it. Oh, now Rav Ilish gets excited. He said to the bird talker, you spoke to a Yona? And the Yona said, I'm going to go free? Oh, okay, now I'm in. Now I'm going to plan my jailbreak. Because the Jewish people are compared to a Yona, and if the Yona said it, right, it's going to happen. Okay, Yonas don't lie. Okay. Amar, Ezel, Echze, Bante, de Rav Nachman, Kaiman, Behem.
What bird is a Yona?
A Yona is a dove. Okay? So Amar Ezel Echse Bante de Rav Nachman Kama Behem Yusaya Adrina. So now he's not going to forget about the daughters of Rav Nachman. They're also there in prison. So he's now planning his prison break, and now he turns to the daughters of Rav Nachman. And he says to the and he's going to basically take them with him. But in other words, what happens when you're a woman and you're in prison, and I guess men as well. But in other words, but with women in prison, so sometimes they become sympathetic to their captors, and sometimes they basically connect with their captors. A term is used to describe it, Stockholm syndrome. Okay, so basically, this Rav Ilish is gonna break free, but he's only gonna take the doors of Rav Nachman if they are still pristine, if they stayed in a state of their virginity. So Amr Neshe Kol Mila Diyaslei Sidron Lahade Beisakise. Every step of the story gets a little bit stranger. Anyway, so Rav Ilish now is going to try to ascertain as to whether or not they are still pure, or have they basically have they joined with their captors physically, emotionally? So now he's going to eavesdrop on their conversation. Where are they going to be conversing? Well, of course, they're going to be talking in the bathroom. And so what he's going to do is he's going to eavesdrop on their conversation in the bathroom. Shamina de Kamran, Ade Guvran, Vinahada Guvran. In the bathroom, he overhears the strangest conversation, and now they're talking about their two sets of husbands. You know, we got husbands back home in Nahardai, but we have husbands here as well? No. So, Lema Lahu, Lishvuya, Delurchakina Mehachad, Lalesu Inche, Lishama, Lapirka, Uleparkinan. So basically, they said the following. Here's what we need to tell our new husbands. You know, our captors, our new husbands. We need to tell them that, look, our husbands back in Nahardai, they're going to try to get us. We need to move further away so that our first husbands are simply not going to get us. Huh. It's clear, by the way, from the conversation that Rav Ilish is overhearing now in the bathroom that they have become unbelievably sympathetic to their captors. I'm being nice, by the way, when I say they're sympathetic to their captors. It's more than they just became sympathetic to the captors, but hopefully you're understanding. So at this point in time now, Rav Ilish realizes, no, I'm not taking the daughters of Rav Nachman with me. And in the moment, we're also going to become fully aware of the fact that he also realizes that when they were stirring the pot with the arm, it's not because they were chassidot. They were not righteous women. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Kam arak asu iu v'au gavra lididei israchish le nisa. So now, who's breaking free from jail? It's Rav Ilish and the bird talker. He doesn't take the daughters of Rav Nachman with him, as we already got done pointing out, but he does take the bird talker with him. Why not? Now, it happens to be that in their escape, so Rav Ilish successfully makes it. As far as the bird talker is concerned, so he got caught and he got killed. Okay. So, Kihadron v'asan amra havuka bachshan kidra b'kshafim. And one end note to the story, and that is that now he gets to review. You know, I saw the daughters of Rav Nachman stirring the pot with their arms, scalding hot water. they didn't get burnt. It has nothing to do with Hasidus. You know what that is? That's called witchcraft. That's called sorcery. Okay. In other words, they were witches. Oh, okay, fine. Okay. Let's go. Let's spend the remaining time today going over one more sugya for today. And I understand we're over time, but we are up to, let's get up to speed. As we turn to the Amud Beis, Mimnei Tikkun HaOlam. Here we are now. We just talked about ransoming and redeeming captives. By the way, the elsewhere, in other words, our Gemara over here just simply caps the amount that you could spend in terms of ransoming somebody who was taken into captivity. Right? Elsewhere, the Gemara describes as Mitzvah Rabbah. The Rambam. I don't have the Lashon of the Rambam in front of me. Please forgive me. So I'm paraphrasing. The Rambam writes, this is the biggest mitzvah of tzedakah. In other words, when somebody's taken into captivity, I know it's kind of like obvious and self-evident, but just as long as we're here and we went through the sugya in our Gemara regarding ransoming people, the Rambam describes it as the biggest form of tzedakah. Now, granted, by the way, that you're capping how much you can spend in terms of ransoming them, but in other words, but up to the cap, there is a mitzvah rabbah. It's a tremendous mitzvah to go ahead and to release somebody from captivity. Okay. Anyway. Excuse me. Over here now, our next Mishnah. So we're talking about now ransoming and redeeming not people, but rather Sfarim. Okay. Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah is taken. I want the Sefer Torah back. So, once again, we're going to collect money in order to get the Sefer Torah. That's also value. And that's also valuable. And you should do it, but the Mishnah says, but again, only up to its value, not beyond its value. So, Amarle Rabuja le Ravashi, yes, okay, de meim hudein lo chim ha, vichte de meim lo chim shmamina, sefer Torah shnim sabiado vikochav, and korimbo. So the Gemara says, now this is unusual, isn't it? Meaning what's happening over here is that, the Sefer Torah now is in the hands of a guy. Okay. We don't know the history of the Sefer Torah. As far as we know, maybe the Sefer Torah was written by the Goy. Who knows? But the only thing the Mishnah tells us is don't overpay for its for getting it out of the hands of the Goy. Which means now that as long as we're paying value, so then I can go ahead and I can take it. Take it, buy it from the Goy, ransom it from the Goy, however you want to describe it. And what it sounds like from the Mishnah is not only that, but even use it. Now that's weird because there is a possibility that the guy himself wrote it. Are you allowed to use a Sefer Torah written by a guy? That's a great question. And the Gemara would suggest that from the Mishnah it would sound like yes. So Dilma Ligno. So the Gemara says maybe no. Maybe what we're doing over here is just simply getting it out of his hands. But we're not going to read it. We're going to put it in Geniza. That's a possibility. Amar Rav Nachman Akhtina Sefer Torah Shekasva Min Yisarev Kasva Vekochav Yiganez Nimsa Biyad Min Yiganez Nimsa Biyad Ovekochavim. So Amri La Yiganez VeAmri La Korimbo. So Rav Nachman says, here's the following tradition that we have. It's a Kabbalah. Naktinan literally means to grab. But over here, whenever you see this expression, naktinan, it means take hold of this tradition. This is a honored and accepted tradition. Number one, a Sefer Torah that was written by a min. What is a min? A min is a Jew, but has gone way over the deep end. In other words, not only has left the reservation, but basically became a card-carrying member of another religion. Okay? Rashi describes it as a komer. Right, we would say priest, by the way, but priest over here, I'm just using it in the most generic sense. In other words, totally, not only dedicated to another religion, but basically, in other words, like leading another religion. Okay. So if you have a min, let's call it, for our purposes right now, let's call him a heretic. Okay, so if you have a min writing a Sefer Torah, so the halacha is that you have such a Sefer Torah, you burn that Sefer Torah. It has absolutely no kedusha to it whatsoever. When he wrote Shem Hashem in that Sefer Torah, he was not thinking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Rachmanis, he was thinking about another god, a false god. It has absolutely zero kedusha. You could burn it. Okay, that's one. Two. Kasva v'kochavim yiganez. Okay. So if a guy wrote the Sefer Torah, so you put in Geniza. I know that sounds strange, But that's number two. Number three, Nimsa Biadmin Yiganes. If I find the Sefer Torah in a min, meaning I don't know if he wrote it. All I know is that he has it. So what do? I put it in Geniza, because I don't know who the author is. However, Nimsa Biadmin Vikochavim, if I find a Sefer Torah in the hands of a guy, I don't know who the author is. So Amrila Yiganes Amrila Korinbo. So over here in our tradition, this is the one part of the tradition that we don't know for certain. Some say that you put in Geniza, some say that you can actually read it. Okay. Sefer Torah Shekasva Ovikochavim, Tinichad Yisarei, Vitan Yidach Yiganes, Vitan Yidach Korinbo. So here now we have a Brisa. Actually three Brisas, a Sefer Torah that is written by a guy. So One Brisa says, burn it. Another Brisa says, put in Geniza. A third Brisa says, you could use it. Okay. We need Pshat in all three of those Brisas. Let's get Pshat in all three. Lo kasha, had the Tanya Yisarei for Rabbi Eliezer Yidamar, Stamach Shevas Avodes Kochavim, Le Avodes Kochavim. So the one Brisa says that you burn it. So this, subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Eliezer Shita is, everything done by a guy, the Machshav is for Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Eliezer believes that Goyim are frum. But I use the word frum, by the way, not in the positive sense. Meaning that they're very religious people and they really believe in their Avodah Zarah. And so therefore, even if it's Tam, a guy, and he writes a Sefer Torah, it was for Avodah Zarah, which means it has zero Kedusha, which means you can burn it. So the first Brisa that says that a Sefer Torah written by a guy, you can burn it. So that is Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. Brisa number two. Ha detanya yiganes haitana hu detanya rava hamanuna braid derava mi parsrunya. That's the name of a place. Sefer Torah tefillin and mezuzah shekasvan. Shekasvan. Now we have whether the word min belongs here or not. Anyway, let's say it was written by a okay. Let's just leave out the word min. Maser ove kochavim eved isha katan. Kusi, Yisrael Mumar, so Psalm Shinamuk Shartam Uksaftim, Koshiashna Bikshira, Yeshna Biksiva, Vakoshaina Bikshira, Aino Biksiva. So in other words, there's a psul in such a Sefer Torah that is written by a non-Jew and an assortment of other people as well, who are not performing the mitzvah of tefillin. In order to be an eligible candidate to write a Sefer Torah, you have to be somebody who puts on tefillin. Okay? All these people are not putting on tefillin either because they're not obligated or they elect not to do so. And so therefore, as a result of that, they're not eligible to write a Sefer Torah. And that is Brisa number two, which means now that it has Kedusha, it just happens to be puzzle. You can't read it. But it would be put in Geniza. There is an opinion that if a guy writes a Sefer Torah, you can even use it. And the Gemara quotes a Brisa that subscribes to that opinion, and it happens to be Rishon and Gamliel subscribes to that viewpoint as well. So, a guy writing a Sefer Torah, what do I do? Three Brisas, either burn it, or put in Geniza, or actually use it. And the Gemara says that what it does, it basically reflects three different viewpoints amongst the Tanaim. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Ibu Lishman, Bai, Ksiv Lishman, Lo Bai, Detanya, Tzipan, Zav, Osha, Tala Alehem, Or Behema Tmea, Psulos, So, Or Behema Torah, Ksheros, Vafa, Pishlo, Ivdan Lishman, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Afilo, Or Behema Torah, Psulos, Achi, Yavdan Lishman. Okay, so to make a long brisa a little bit shorter, all we need to know is that Rav Shimon Gamliel says that when you are processing the hide for your tefillin, it has to be done l'shem mitzvah, ibud l'shma, even in the tanning process, meaning the material, the actual leather itself has to be coming from a kosher animal. But moreover, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, it has to be that the processing, the tanning itself, has to be l'shem mitzvah tefillin. Now, what the Gemara basically says is that I can't imagine, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the processing of the leather has to be lishma, and you tell me that the writing of the Sefer Torah does not have to be lishma? I can't imagine. So, Amar Rava Bar Shmuel, so, Begir Shechazel Lesuro. So the Gemara says, okay, you misunderstood. When Rav Shimon Gamliel says that a guy wrote a Sefer Torah and you could use it, he didn't mean a guy. You're absolutely right. He meant a Jew. So when we use the word guy, what do we mean? We mean that he was a Jew, but basically, it was a convert, but basically a convert that went back to being a guy. So the Gemara says, wait one second. Kol shekein da'avalei min. So the Gemara says, wait one second. You have a convert who goes back to being a guy. He doesn't become a guy. You know what he's called? We have a word to describe. It's called the min. In other words, once you convert, you're Jewish. That's it, period. There is no returning back to not being Jewish. And if you elect to behave like a non-Jew, so the word to describe that individual is a min, not a non-Jew. So I'm Rav Ashi, Chozel Asura, Mishum Yira. So the Gemara says, okay. No, in other words, his return back to behaving like a non-Jew was not because he actually believed it, but Mishum Yira. In other words, he was threatened. It was out of fear. In other words, but the truth, it was an onis. It's basically a case of onis, which means, So which means that really effectively the conversion is good. He's still Jewish, and the fact that now he's behaving like a non-Jew. So that's just simply out of yira. If he were to write a Sefer Torah, such a Sefer Torah would be acceptable again according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Tana Rabbanan Ma'alein B'dmeihem Ad Kedei Tarpik My Tarpik Amar Rav Sheshes Istira. How much more overvalue can you spend? Just one istira, that's a chatzi dinar. Ha'hiti Asa Da'isa Chayta D'Tfilin L'Kamei D'Abaye. And we finish up today's daf with one more story. This story is not going to be nearly as wild as the story that we saw halfway through the daf today, but the story's out there. But not nearly as wild. You had a Arab woman who goes to Abaye, and what does she have? She has pairs and pairs of tefillin. And now Abaye has an opportunity to basically redeem, ransom the tefillin from this Arab woman. So Amr la yavdili resh resh betamre. So I'm sorry, Amr la. He says to her, look, I'll pay you for them. For every pair of tefillin that you give me, I'll give you one tamar. That's a date. I'll give you one date for every pair of tefillin. Now, I don't know how much tefillin cost back in the good old days, but I'm venturing a guess, by the way, that he made an offer that was far below its value. That's what I would imagine. And I'm imagining that because I know what her reaction is. Let's see it together. So, Amrli Avdalei Resh Resh Batamri. So, for every pair of tefillin, I'll give you one date. So, Imle Ziara. So, she was filled with Zahara. Zahara basically is, she was filled with poison. She was angry. She was incensed. Shakla Shadisa Benara. She took all the tefillin. She threw them into the river. Obviously destroying the tefillin. So Amar lo Ibaile lezuzunle ba'api kolehai. And Abai had misgivings. He felt really like, I did bad. In other words, what I did is I made a ridiculous offer. I shouldn't have made a ridiculous offer. I should have made a real offer. And okay. And the Gemara over here, right, not ready to whitewash, what Abai himself admits is an error that he made on his part in terms of the original offer that he made for the tefillin. He recognizes that he shouldn't have done that. Okay. Ad Khan, we're going to stop over here. Okay. I'm not sorry for going overtime. Wow, did I go overtime today? But we're back up to speed. This is where we need to be. Okay. Tomorrow's daf mem vav.